Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Just screaming at his team, win, win, win. And the opponents would be like, yeah, no shit. We get it. You're trying to win. But win actually stood for what's important now.
Oh,
so whether they made a successful play or they got stopped or something happened. Okay, next up, what's important now? Power Athlete Nation, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. Tex McQuilkin here, the Director of Training and Education for Power Athlete. And today I will be joined by Ms. Callie Hinsman for a little Turns of the Tables. Callie will be interviewing me and we're going to be speaking about coaching. So going back into a little bit of my history within sport and what led me to begin coaching in my career and how we were able to turn a lot of those into lessons that we speak to within the Power Athlete methodology. So a lot to unpack here, to quote our good friend Rob Wolf, but we explore a little history and the importance of coaches, whether you're working with youth, whether you're in the fitness industry. So much valuable information within here. And if you want to learn more about exactly what we speak about in a more in-depth sense, head to academy.powerathletehq.com for all of our online coach and trainer education. Until then, let's get started. Get ready. Power Athlete Nation, what's happening? Tex here, the Director of Training and Education for Power Athlete, and I'm joined by Callie Hinsman. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. I have no formal title. I've just been a groupie for years and years.
Not necessarily. So Callie and I have worked together technically, 12 years, 2010.
Is that it? It feels like longer.
Well, put in all the continents, all the miles, all the seminars that we've logged. Certainly.
The cheesesteaks.
Oh my God, probably the greatest job interview of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, today we're going to explore coaching a little bit and experience, and Callie is going to propose some questions for us to discuss, open up, and reveal.
Ooh, reveal. How vulnerable.
So yes.
Yeah. No, I'm excited to do it because we've batted around some ideas for possibly doing another episode together. And one of the things that I really want to do is interview you because, you're like an onion, man, just the layers just keep on coming. And, you look shocked when I say that.
Well, this position, this seat, I get to interview John every day and then I get to interview these wonderful guests. So this
right,
is
but the people want to know, who is Tex McQuilkin? Who is this Christopher McQuilkin that you speak of? And so for me, a lot of people don't know you nearly as well as I do. We've been super good friends for a really long time. And so I think it's cool to get the opportunity to ask you some questions and like dive a little deeper on some of your passions, your history. And as John puts it, like, where'd you come from and how'd you get to where you are today? And I don't know where that accent came from because he does not have a Southern accent, but that is my best.
Yeah, you're from Virginia, so you put the twang on the SoCal vibes.
Yeah, which is where we essentially where we met. Or would you say Virginia or DC?
I would say Virginia, fitness first, results later.
Results later. I thought it was going to be fitness first, excuses later.
No, that's CrossFit Balboa.
I love it. Yep. That's where the old stomping grounds were. Can you even remember the first time we met?
I do. You had that Posh Spice haircut.
Oh my God. First of all, it was so bad. I got my haircut. This woman gave me a T-Boz a la TLC. If anybody remembers that girl group. Yeah. Texas being kind when he calls it a Posh Spice haircut. It was heinous. There is like high in the back. So it was business in the back, party in the front, kind of the opposite of what you, it was a reverse mullet, essentially.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I had a mullet. So it was like a perfect balance. Naturally, I mean, fast
yin
friends.
Yin yang situation.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fitness first. I was personal training and you were sales rep and then went off. I was in grad school at the time, but then we were able to reconnect. I was finished with school and then back in DC through Devin Mayer Balance Gym. And Then that's where we reconnected.
Yeah. Another fitness first prisoner who escaped to the great world of the District of Columbia. We eventually found each other there again and became training partners and coaches together and all that stuff. And the rest is history.
So they say. But yeah, an awesome experience. And then it just goes to show you in the world of fitness, as I imagine, that's the only career I've ever had. And you just keep running into the same people. And if you're a good person, they're a good person. Eventually you'll reconnect and then opportunities abound.
Which would lend itself very well into some of the first questions I have for you. Are you ready? This is not like rapid fire, but it's going to be
ready.
And essentially tell you suffer from heat stroke because I'm keeping an eye on you. Don't think I haven't seen you wipe your brow a few times. So what are some of your earliest like memories of sport going way back? Like think about loving sport for the first time, loving getting on the field or being competitive. Let's start there. Let's not even make our way to the weight room yet, but what are some of your earliest memories of that?
Well, through my father, who was a baseball kid, so baseball first, and then absolutely loved basketball. And this is the heyday of the NBA. Talking Jordan, and then the back-to-back NBA champion Houston Rockets. And I mean, really the exposure to basketball. So my dad went to North Carolina State, which is 1983 NCAA basketball champions with a coach named Jim Valvano, who became famous because he had cancer, and then ESPN, he had an amazing speech at the ESPY Awards that has now become Jimmy V Week, and it's the give up, don't ever give up speech, and it's amazing. So my dad lived that and then would push basketball, NC State, into the household, and I follow along not knowing any better. And then eventually the Rockets, Rudy T. So then you have this very charismatic coach. And then his speech is never underestimate the heart of a champion. So winning for any kid is going to help you fall in love and become a fan of said team. It just happened to be my hometown team. And like from there, coaches were always highlighted and spotted by my dad. So it was Rudy T, Jim Valvano, and then a man named Lou Holtz. So he also coached at NC State, mm-hmm. Notre Dame. Now he's all over TV. His son's a coach. His grandson's a coach. I actually coached his grandson at University of Texas when I was there. But Lou Holtz is all about big time goals, writing goals. And then probably one of my favorite stories about him is standing on the sideline and just screaming at his team, win, win, win. And the opponents would be like, yeah, no shit. We get it. You're trying to win. But win actually stood for what's important now.
Oh,
so whether they made a successful play or they got stopped or something happened. Okay, next up, what's important now? So it was always this next play. But I mean, the goals and the emphasis on goals for me came from listening to speeches by Lou Holtz and getting into that way. So it was always just coaches were a part of my life. It wasn't necessarily athletes and players. Like, I had dudes' jerseys as a kid. Muggsy Bogues, still got that jersey.
But oh, I had the basketball. Is he the shortest player in NBA history, right? Oh,
my inspiration.
He was like your height.
Oh, yeah. Still is. But, like, had the jerseys, but realized quickly, like, the players are on the team and then they're gone. But I stuck with the city, the fan base, and then the coaches would last a hell of a lot longer than the players, at least back then. And they always had something to say that resonated and connected with me. So that was sport. It was through basketball, through baseball, and then eventually when I became an athlete, football, through middle school. Like, every kid in Texas starts to play football in middle school. So then that transitioned to my first exposure to weightlifting. Sixth grade was when we started to lift, which was cool. Like, I wouldn't call it coaching, but that was our first exposure to the barbell.
And how much were you lifting in sixth grade?
Well, we had the coach's coach. I was thinking about this and trying to remember, but how it was set up, like, seventh grade football began, but we wouldn't start weightlifting until football season was over. So winter time ish. And then they taught us all the lifts when we were in sixth grade. So we had about probably 6 months between the instruction and the actual, like, hey, go get them. We're going to test one RM.
That's pretty rare, don't you think? I mean, middle school introduction to weightlifting, you do not see that.
I mean, it was normal in Texas. So I was actually the demo boy. Like, how our weight room was set up, and I will never forget it. Like, we had a bench press and then a dumbbell rack station for arms curls. Then we had an incline bench press and then another just set of dumbbells with now benches and then mirrors on the wall. Mm-hmm. Essentially this four or five rows of these four stations. And that was it. So no legs, no squats, no nothing in middle school, I imagine, right? Because the coaches can't necessarily coach that. But then when they were using the demos, rather than the coaches show us what to do, I got called out to set up on the bench press and then execute it. And it was the 45-pound bar. I'm in sixth grade. Like, now I reference what we speak about when we're in the power athlete methodology, like intermuscular coordination. I'm all over the place, moving and shaking, trying to lift this bar. Mm-hmm. And the coach is trying to instruct, but I'm doing my best. I'm just not a coordinated kid. And that was it. 45 pounds was the max that first time. But then transition to the end of actual football season, we hit our 1RMs. My max out was 65 pounds. That was it. This is all I can muster, 20 pounds stronger 6 months later. But within 2 weeks, so they gave us a shot. It was 1RM. And then I think 2 weeks later, they were going to test us and decide, okay, these are going to be bigs and these are going to be smalls. If you're in the smalls, you're going to be a cornerback and a wide receiver, a defensive back, and you're just going to run every day because we need you to be fast. And they did nothing but distance running. But, like, I wanted to lift weights. I at the time was defensive line linebacker, undersized, of course. But, yeah, I didn't want to run. So then I needed my 85 pounds. But I got it. That was it. Maxed out at 85 pounds. Of course, failed at whatever the hell I tried, attempted next. It was probably like 115. But then that was it. So then I got the opportunity every single day to start doing the same four-station routine within the football class, because that's how Texas works. Football is a class. Mm-hmm. And we got to start training then. It was great. It was memorable. I remember the colors, remember the weight room. I remember the coaches just hanging out at their desk, reading magazines, and just letting the kids have some fun.
Let the kids play. So you mentioning the weight training stuff being essentially like a baby deer and only doing upper body lifts. it begs the question, if you could go back, just looking at middle school as just not even high school, but just middle school, if you could go back and as a coach yourself, do things differently, what would you have done differently with your athletes at the middle school level, given everything that you know now? Because again, maybe spent the time in the weight room, not necessarily the most advantageous, but it's a good introduction to the lifts. So what would you do differently?
I would have taken away the barbell, but still had heavier implements for us to lift. Mm-hmm. And much like we speak to this approach in our austere course and apply in our third monkey training program, like it's still challenging movement, but we find tools, cinder block, sandbags, that force you into good positions and then fighting for that.
What do you think that would have done for a young Chris McQuilkin?
Certainly increased my performance. I was a B teamer for life, straight into then JV. So like certainly improved my performance potentially. But I opened my eyes to then the challenges, because I mean, back then it was not connected to performance. Like I want pecs. I want more biceps. I want to get a bigger vein within my forearms when I try to flex as hard as I can.
So is like it at still that age, not about that? I feel like it's still about that.
Oh, well, now here I am. I got to do math years later.
Post-performance era.
Yeah. The twilight of my 30s, we're back to where I started. So it would have been, I guess, connected more towards performance. Mm-hmm. And then, like, I didn't make the basketball, tried out for basketball, didn't make the team. So then you just defaulted back to the weight room. So mm-hmm. I would have done a better job, I guess, of instead of just setting the kids free, giving them a program, taking away the barbell, and then giving them essentially the primal movements that we talk about with sandbags, tires, blocks, just things that are easier to teach and less likely for a kid to screw up.
Right. Now, even though we're talking about taking away the barbell, I do want to ask you about a paramount time in every lifter's life, which is, when's the first time that you can remember benching 135?
That is an excellent question. It happened some point in this middle school, like eighth grade for sure, uh-huh. on the way out. So back to the weight room, why it was so memorable. Like my mom was a nurse at Memorial Hospital. I went to Memorial Middle School. And so like the hospital was my babysitter. Mm-hmm. So after school, you walk and you hang out until she's finished with her shift. That sucked. So if we're not playing football, okay, well, then I can just hang out at the weight room. Our coaches don't care. I didn't make the basketball team. So then, okay, I'm sticking with the weight room. And what do we do every single day? Bench press. So rather than, you know, just go sit in a waiting room somewhere, I'll sit in a weight room and just get stronger. So certainly got 135 bench. And then transitioning into high school, we actually had performance coaches, which is interesting because in Texas, when I was in high school, they switched over summer rules. If you had a football at your training session, it was considered a practice. So I had two summers where we had Arena League football players come out to the high school and train us as athletes. And it was phenomenal. Phenomenal because we mixed weight room, speed, and skill. Mm-hmm. So then at this stage, I knew I was going to be a linebacker. So then you just worked with a semi-professional, you know, still Arena League, professional athlete on the specific skills that you need to execute. And so that progressed me leaps and bounds. And I remember my squat like being less than my bench press. And then within a matter of weeks, however long that summer did, that pre-freshman year, mm-hmm. like that's when it all started to come together. And then I became more of a squatty body, mm-hmm. and appreciated leg days versus, you know, what was 2 years of upper body days.
Nothing wrong with a squatty body. And I like how you, earlier, I don't even think you caught yourself say it, but you went from the weight room to the weight room.
Oh.
The waiting room to the weight room. Oh, that's good. the nursing situation, that was good.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, yeah, that's your legacy now. So I guess, you know, we're talking a little bit more about freshman year, and I'm wondering if maybe high school or even middle school, there are some coaches that stand out to you, you know, coaching and like the nuance of coaching and communication and connection is something that you're really passionate about. So I'm curious as to if there was somebody that resonated with you as a youngster and why you think that is.
He stand out and resonate because I didn't necessarily have, I had good men as coaches, but not great coaches. So where they put me in the best position to learn a lot of life lessons. Like there was times when I needed what I would consider like a coach and a mentor and for somebody to lean on that I didn't have it. And I won't name names, but one experience in which I had. So I was junior on JV, and how the school operated, we were rivals with every year state champion. And so coaches were measuring us against the best, although we were not competitive. But then what the coaches, they aimed to do was put some sophomores, and they were great. They're very talented on our varsity team, and then keep our juniors on JV. So they were investing more coaching and pouring into these kids to give themselves an opportunity 1-2 years down the line against the inevitable state champion. Mm-hmm. So that was like selling hope, selling longevity, selling opportunity so they could maintain their jobs, and then felt that they decided like my crew, my boys' performance for us. And what did stick out was following our spring ball. Like I started playing lacrosse at this point, but following our spring football.
How old were you, or what grade were you in?
16, 17. So junior.
Okay.
Junior year, March birthday. So started playing lacrosse, 16 years old, went into the JV football season, but was a football guy that played lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
Like we started the team there. It was a lot of fun. And then like where I switched, I guess my focus and attention was following our junior football season. Coach takes us all individual into different into the room to speak to us, communicate what we need to work on, prepare for the next year. And he told me straight up, you work hard in the weight room, you work hard out on the field, but you're just not any good. And so you're waiting for then another like compliment sandwich or constructive feedback or for something to work on.
Right. So something actionable after that.
Yeah. No, that was it.
Wow.
So there was this moment of dead air where I just have to accept and eat the quote unquote feedback that I'm receiving following the year here, preparing for my last year of football. And that was it. So, of course, heartbroken, like plenty of shit going on at home. I needed a coach. And then this was it. Like
this was the closest thing to a coach that you had. And it was like, so how did that shape you after that? Were you knew something was wrong with that conversation, but probably it wasn't until years later that you realized this is why I walked out of this feeling so hopeless or feeling so, you know, defeated, or like I said, just at the minimum, like there wasn't anything that I could take action. There was no ammunition to move forward. Right. I feel like that's not something that you can really recognize when you're the age that you were. You just know something's fucked up. And so it's like not till later till you either receive good coaching or good mentors, or you've gone through some sort of experience or educational process yourself. Right.
Yeah. I didn't know how to process it. So what I did know is that our lacrosse team, it was fun. We were winning. Like we weren't a playoff team, but we had certainly exceeded more than we should have our first year. And so I got my boys, I got camaraderie, teamwork, and then this is just the beginning stages of skill development. So of course it's accelerated. Like the more work I put in, the more my stick work and footwork and understanding of the game improved. So I was getting a lot of performance feedback as an athlete, where I wasn't getting it as support from a person from the football perspective. Coincidentally, the lacrosse coach at the time, like, he was just a good guy. He was not a coach, but he was, you know, dude from Long Island that loves lacrosse. And then we just scrimmaged, and he got to play with us and show us essentially the ropes. And one thing that stood out for me that he said is, you're going to be remembered for what you're not supposed to do. And if you think about that, it does stick out. Like, if we are supposed to have a lot of potential and be this freshman kid that goes to this college team and turn it around, but then we don't, we're going to be remembered as, you know, this high potential kid that never made it. Or if I'm this walk-on that goes to this team, I'm not supposed to make the team. I'm not supposed to earn my scholarship. I'm not supposed to start. I'm not supposed to make a difference. They're going to recruit beyond me because I'm not supposed to do this. But then you do. Then you are this story. You are this moment. You are this kid that the coach has developed. You know, that, you know, had the right attitude, and they never counted, you never counted yourself out. Mm-hmm. So it stuck out. So why I held on to this phrase and quote, no idea, but it the more that played lacrosse, the more that it meant to me, because a kid from Texas going to the East Coast to play, I'm not supposed to.
Yeah. I love
it. Especially 20 years ago. But like, I'm not mad at the football coach. So I know John's spoken of his coaching scars before and how they fueled him, and he named names. And no, I'm not mad at the man. It's just shit. When I needed a coach, I didn't have one, and it sucked. Right. So then looked for another outlet where I could use my body, athleticism, training, be with my friends, and continue to hold on to what, I mean, I needed. I wasn't getting it elsewhere.
Yeah. I love these stories, because it creates like this framework for everything that I've seen you do, like, since then. And since I've known you, it's all the pieces start to fit together and make sense. Like, you know, even when you were reflecting back on your earliest memories of sport and talking about the basketball coaches around your dad's kind of, as he was bringing you up into sport, and the basketball coaches that were popular during that time, and how they were essentially very quote worthy. And that's a huge part of who you are, is you tend to latch on to phrases that really resonate with you, and things that, like, even just the quote that you just used from the coach from Long Island, you know, to me, that's something that you've carried on from essentially childhood all the way through your adulthood. You're like obsessed with quotes, and you have one for virtually every situation. And then this whole experience with your coaches during this pretty formative time in your life, when you were, you know, a lot of shit going on at home, a lot of, you know, sort of, where do I go from here in sport? And, you know, having that conversation with your coach that basically said, hey, like, you just suck, essentially. Like, I can see how that now has influenced you. You took that and you came up with an entire coaching series of articles and communication series through Power Athlete, so that people are armed with tools so they don't experience that which you experienced, you know. And I think it's amazing that this is kind of like, this is exactly why I wanted to have these conversations, because it shows like what has fueled your desire to, you know, not repeat the same, or not have other coaches repeat the same flaws of the past. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. The series in which Callie's speaking about is called Power Coach. Go to powerathletehq.com, search that. It's 12, it's a series of 12 articles written, man, probably 5 or 6 years over the span of it, but then 12 lessons that aimed to walk through the life cycle of a coach. I still got some pieces that I need to add to it, but it was, you just get the itch hey, I got to hold on to this one key phrase. Mm-hmm. And then here comes a lesson or a blog or an article from it.
So yeah,
it's good. Good journey. I remember.
Definitely, definitely a good series. And I send those to people now because I think it's helpful when people ask me certain questions. It's like, just refer back to this, you know, because it, you know, the coaching aspect of it or the mentorship aspect, it's just, to me, it's just, and I tell people all the time, it's just like a vehicle to, a lot of other lessons and facets in life. And, you know, and the same thing goes, is true for lifting weights or training, which kind of leads into another question I have of you is, since training, lifting weights, you know, all of these auxiliary things around sport, even though maybe we're not playing sport regularly in a competitive fashion anymore, the training is still a huge integral part of life. What purpose do you think that serves for you? And if you can answer this part two of the question, part 2A, if you couldn't train, lift weights, et cetera, how would you be able to, what would be the vehicle for these lessons, right? So like, what's the lesson? And then if you couldn't, like, if you were not physically capable, you'd have to have another avenue to experience these, whatever lessons are. So what would that be?
But I'm still coaching now. So the lesson essentially is practice what I preach. So I still have high expectation for the high schoolers, which I directly coach, but then we coach a shit ton of coaches and then thousands of athletes through our training programs. But like one-to-one, I still have a very high expectation of them because I would never ask them to do anything that I wouldn't be able to do or have done myself.
Why do you think that's so important? You don't mind me interrupting you there, because I think a lot of people, there's schools of thought on either side that are pretty well balanced, because there's a lot of people who do not think it's necessary, or maybe in some sports or in some settings, it's important to be able to demonstrate and to exhibit the same physical prowess or whatever. But there's also situations where it's absolutely not necessary because of your level of experience or other variables. So why do you think it's important?
Because the kid, they're doubting themselves. They believe they can't do this. So whether it's a specific conditioning workout or specific weight training experience or a movement skill, whether that's sport or the physical preparedness that we provide, they for one moment believe they cannot do it. So then I show them, okay, this is what it looks like. This is the model of the expectation. And trust me, I'm going to make it look as seamless and effortless and as beautiful as possible. And then they are going to try it and they're going to fail. But guess what? I'm going to make them do dead bugs, do our side pillar work, do a lot of the skips and the different movements through space that they are uncoordinated at until they're not. So then it creates this sense of confidence of, okay, I acknowledge I'm scared of this. I can't do that. Or I suck at this. I think everybody's looking at me, but guess what? I got 40 dudes out there that everyone thinks everybody's looking at everybody, but they're not. So then it's getting them to focus on the movement. And then over time, exposure just becomes second nature in baby games. And so it really will carry over. So this next year, I did 1 year high school, 2 years middle school before. This next year, year two with the high school, it's going to click because the freshmen are going to come in. And they're going to be as bad at the skips, the dead bugs, and all the stuff that these high schoolers were the year before. And they're going to see how hard they worked and the progress. And now it's on me to help them realize and coach them up on how to coach their new teammates and how to be leaders, how to carry over. So it's one, they believe they can't do it, or that looks impossible, or that looks hard, but I'm going to make them do it. I'm going to show them that I can do it. And then the next year here, where I modeled and led, they become the models and the leaders of the team. And then maybe 4 years from now, like when I'm 40, I don't have to, but I probably still will sprint my ass off with the team and do all these things because seniors and juniors, and it's just the way of the team. So we're aiming to build a culture of movement, but it all has to start with me. Otherwise, I'm just telling these kids to go do things versus showing them, and that's not a leader in my mind. That's going back to the coach. That's just them telling me that I'm no good, but not giving me any feedback to then progress versus the high school coach that I had that was positively affirming us. Hey, you guys are great. Your effort, amazing athletes. And then he showed us that, you know, this is how you play, and he would be out there himself with us.
I think it's an important thing that you said is that development, it starts with you, but what you didn't say is that it ends with you. And I think like, that's the whole point. And when you said you develop these athletes and then they go on to their next year and they become the, you know, they have the abilities then to exhibit, demonstrate, whatever, to push the next generation that's coming up. Because I think you can get into a little bit of, depending on the coach's approach, you can't make a program or a mentality or a ethos for a team be fully dependent on just you. That's not sustainable. And what happens when you get sick, or you know, something happens and you need to be fostering that within these little, malleable athletes, because the program can't just be only as strong as you. I think it can get stronger than you. You know what I mean? I think that's a good kind of distinction that you made. So that being said, what would you, if you couldn't physically exhibit any of these qualities, like let's just, you can answer in the realm of coaching or just in your own personal life, like training, like if you couldn't physically do these things, now what?
I would still would teach it, or I would teach in any form, like health, and then goals, direction, aim, possibility, and just bottom line. Like if you talk about like what I'm trying to accomplish here, it's take people where they can't take themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's in the classroom and understanding like history, or I mean health. I'm just thinking about all the high school coaches that I had that were teaching me in classes, mm-hmm. and some were amazing. And the more passionate they were about history, the more I was in. The less passionate about they were with topics, I was out. So just connecting to that passion, whatever it is, I would fall into place. That's it. So I still do that with, you know, strength and conditioning. With our, if anyone's seen present at the NSCA deals, whether it's the NSCA tactical or the coaches conference, or any of our lectures, shameless plug, powerathleteacademy.powerathletehq.com. It's just putting what I would give to an athlete into a lecture, so mm-hmm. then the coach is connected, so that they can still hand off that same passion, drive, and plus the information, pathos, ethos, and logos to their kid.
Yeah. I know I've told you like 1,000 times on the phone before, but when I watch you speak at these events and stuff, it's amazing. Like it's public speaking, but your passion that's behind that, that drives the public speaking and the effect that you have as the viewer, the listener, the audience member is just, it's really incredible. And I'm not trying to like blow smoke up your ass, but you can tell that you love what you do just based on the energy that you put forth, and you make it seem effortless, and it's not. I mean, it's a polished practice, you know, going back to the receiving critical feedback from coaches or mentors. We definitely had that along the line mm-hmm. when we were doing seminar stuff. It's pretty harsh feedback and criticism, and you can use those as opportunities, quote unquote, to develop, to push yourself and to refine your skill set. And so, you know, that's something that you've done over the years, and now it just looks seamless and effortless. So, it's definitely been polished over time, but you know, like I said, the passion being the driving force is what, that's what makes the experience for the person that's actually listening. So, you know, to continue the conversation about training, aside from just maybe not having the physical capacity to do these things and having an outlet, how has your training, because, you know, over the years, you're training to get stronger and better at your sport. And now it's, you know, to exhibit the same skill set to your athletes so you can demonstrate. But how is the, like, what are you training for? How has that evolved in kind of like a big picture thing?
Big picture, bringing in nutrition, like, not often neglected, but just taken for granted, the understanding. And then again, I'm getting older and I'm in prime Achilles tendon tear age, especially for how active I still am. So the healthier I can be, the healthier my tissues will be, and the less likely I'll lead to an injury. Mm-hmm. And God forbid that ever does happen, nutrition better be freaking dialed in so my body can focus on its healing versus whatever crap I'm putting in. So it's bringing in this holistic approach, for the lack of a better term, and actually acknowledging the things that we were teaching and how important they are, and that the gut truly is the window to the immune system, whether it's protecting that for the benefits of training or the benefits of health, so then I can continue to recover
right
from the less work that I'm doing now. Again, now full force practice what I'm preaching. And the Hammer 90 competition, which we wrapped up recently, fortunately, nutrition coach Sam Flaherty was able to piece together a performance protocol specific to the goal I was going for in my body weight, and walk me through the 90 days and help me with that. Because then, it was a team. So she did this for me. I'm going to value this and then let the rest fall in place by actually listening to what my teammate had to say for me. So
yeah, if only more people followed that thought process, you know, somebody who takes the time to deliver something to you on a platter and that's for you, that, you know, is using their expertise. Shit, there's a lot of people who have wasted opportunities like that. So, okay, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had oatmeal with chocolate collagen and then some blueberries and then shit ton of coffee, because I was writing this morning.
Okay.
I'm also rewriting our methodology, so then that's adding. We wrote that, man, years ago, so now mm-hmm. I'm at the opportunity of more lessons, more teams, more coaches that have been through our block one, identifying where they need to better understand the tools and the application. So rewriting that based off the lessons we learned. The block one test is as much a test for us mm-hmm. as it is for the coaches, because we're delivering the information. They're coming back to us as the students. And then it's no easy test. So they got to essentially give us back the information, and the test is feedback for us for what we're putting out there in terms of education. So righting some wrongs in there. So this morning was fueled to dive into a creative state for you and I are connecting here. But
do you fuel based on the endeavor?
Often.
Mental endeavor. I'm not obviously physical, yes, but does the food affect your mind, your mental state?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely.
So if you were to have like eggs instead, like if you had 6 eggs instead of oatmeal, would you have, like, how is the oatmeal optimizing like a mental state for writing?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
But you just knew that was the right meal for the right mindset.
Well, certainly with fruits, getting some energy in there.
Mm-hmm. Just curious. You can noodle on that one for a little while.
I will have to.
So when we used to train together way back when, I'm trying to think of like the music that we listen. Oh yeah. Oh.
The Darkness.
Oh, we used to listen to The Darkness all the time. And I think you bought me my first Darkness CD. Children, that's compact disc. And I listened to that as I drove across country for my job with CrossFit Football. And yeah, it was on repeat.
It's a great album.
In my Wrangler. So we used to listen to that a ton. What else did we listen to? I mean, we would listen to that, and like, you were just a big fan of like that type of music, very Queen-esque.
Oh, yeah.
Type.
I mean, the Darkness is a modern day Queen.
Yeah.
But I mean, the high pitches.
Yeah.
And the toe tapping tunes.
What do you listen to now?
Queen and the Darkness.
Oh. Yeah.
Yes. And no, I still get into it, but I mean, the freaking late 90s to the early 2000s, just locked in that middle school, high school music.
Yeah.
Phase, which is
Cisco, like, Thong Song.
Yeah. On repeat, To the Window, To the Wall. Like,
oh,
I don't
yeah.
know a lot of rap music, but the ones that I do know from high school, they're still in there.
They're highly inappropriate. Yeah. That last one, definitely. As a mother, Tex, I don't recommend it.
I mean, we're playing it at the high school, like basketball and volleyball games.
I know.
The teachers didn't know any better.
But the thing
or
is,
they did.
Kids in Texas. Yeah. Or yeah, exactly. Kids in Texas, though, they were treated as adults from the time they could, you know, if you could wield like a six shooter, you were considered an adult. And so that was you.
Yeah. Driving was 15 back then. Like,
Wow.
I mean, yeah. What is funny about that, we like me and my buddies all took driver's ed together, and then our instructor, like something happened to them. They went to jail. I think it was a DUI. So then they just passed all of us.
That will happen.
So we didn't even take driver's ed. Like, we just took the class and then all passed.
How is this possible?
I don't know.
There's no oversight in Texas.
Hello.
Oh my God. Wow. There are a lot of loopholes down there in Katy, Texas. I am not mad at it. It's just hard for me to wrap my mind around in the culture and society that we currently live in, where nothing like that would go unnoticed. You know, how about the fact that you've performed live? Like as a musician, I think that is something that people would be really surprised to know.
Yes. I was in a band. In college, in post-college,
yep.
We had three total shows. Our band name was One Track Mind, no spaces. So it was Buddy. I don't want to ruin his career, because like, we were bad. We were like a poor man's Tenacious D. We aimed to curse as much as possible, because we would play at a family restaurant that had an open mic, and we just thought it was funny. In the theme of this Power Athlete Radio performance for the people, that's what the One Track Mind did. We were performance for the people. I have some funny stories along those concerts that I can't even get into. Not family friendly, but it was important. My bandmate is an amazing musician, phenomenal guitar player, talented as all hell, and he was just too nervous to do it himself. And like, I don't know, if I stay stagnant long enough, get a little stir crazy and do something stupid like the rodeo. We were a band for years before we actually performed our first show. So that was okay. I'll get up there and make an ass of myself for you, friend. So that's what we did. We had wrote our own music. Like, it's so bad that it's good. We just never got the eyes on that the Tenacious D did, and then created this amazing history. Oh, big fan of Tenacious D, by the way. So yeah, One Track Mind. If you can find it on YouTube, good luck.
I love it's that you're there. Like, you keep likening yourself to Tenacious D, you know, and I think that's putting yourself pretty high up there. That's saying a lot. So
I mean, Scott can play and sing, and he's amazing. Yeah. And then I'm just there. So,
you're not. I saw you guys perform once, I think, or you perform potentially.
No, it was definitely both of us, because I wouldn't do it without him. He wouldn't do it without me.
I can picture the bar and the stage.
Oh, it's no longer in business. It's called The Front Page. It was in Ballston Mall.
Yes. Oh my God.
Arlington, Virginia.
Such a good memory. Of course, you were performing, and I was probably like getting shit-faced, but...
Well, yeah, they only let us play on Tuesday nights. And at the same time, they let us continue to play because we would just bring racks of people and give them so much money just to make fools of ourselves.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what started, I suppose, my public speaking career is getting up there.
It's pretty impressive. You know, I think, like, it takes some balls.
Are you a musician as well?
I studied music for a really long time, specifically opera, which a lot of people don't know that, but done a lot of performing and being judged, going to competitions and being judged and having to do qualifying pieces and things like that, and getting rated. And
oh God.
Yeah. So getting a rating from, like, you know, from basically like 1 to 5 type thing, doing state competitions and that kind of thing. And it's like, it just never felt like good. It just always feels really awful. Like not the judging part, but just the first few notes of performance, you're like, I can't believe we're fucking doing this again. And then you kind of get into a groove, but it's very nerve wracking. And so I tip my hat to you, sir.
Man, that reminds me of Dead Poet Society, where he draws this very theoretical graph on the board of how to judge and grade poetry.
Mm.
And then he asks all his students to just rip out that first chapter. Like, I don't know. Can you apply that to music? I do appreciate The Voice and all those music competition shows, because, I mean, those people, not the ones that like make fun of the bad ones, the ones that like highlight these amateurs that are really good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of hidden talent out there. And you, sir, might just be one of them. So as we're kind of winding down the conversation, where do you think the holes in your training or your coaching currently are? Or are you perfection, like personified?
No, I stay within my wheelhouse in terms of coaching.
Is that always, that's your advice to everyone? Just stay in your wheelhouse.
Let's say I'm working with the kids. I'm not going to do anything experimental that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's inbounds, it's safe, and they are training for their sport and their performance. So like if I were to go outside of my wheelhouse, and then, I mean, a lot of the specific track, the sport of track and field, that would be outside my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So diving in, but it is so specified, but I'm sure I can learn a lot to then carry over to, like in terms of bounding, if we're talking about the triple jump and understanding the bounding and the approaches for a high jump and all of that, to then carry over and apply it more simply to field court sport athletes. That would be a hole that I can deep dive. So within my training, certainly bounding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the beauty of, I mean, I didn't get the opportunity to speak to like great mentors and coaches that I've had, Ruiz in particular. But the biggest takeaway from him was that I was a try hard. I would try too hard. So it would work against me. That tension was preventing me from really understanding and becoming quick and fast and speed carry over. So now I see those kids on the field to try to get them to, you know, Chubbs Peterson, ease in the tension, baby, and just relax. Mm-hmm. So like the holes would be more of the extreme side of those contract and relax, the bounding, the triple jumps, the sport of track and field, that then I can aim to understand to then bring to field court sport athletes in a very simple feature. So I know I can connect the dots. I just got to find the right coach to have conversations with to connect those dots. Like we've had Dan Paff on the podcast. So he'd be one. And there's plenty of coaches at the Clint Martin, strength and conditioning coach for the Texas track team, we've also had on the podcast. So I have people I can lean on. I just got to do it.
What about non-physical
I mean, recovery. So, but I don't know. Like, the big thing, again, with our education, academy.powerathletehq.com, we assume that you have nothing, no resources other than yourself and then a barbell.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a lot of the recovery practices do involve some form of tool. Like, even if it is just an ice bath, that's still a cost. So, like, if I can understand the pieces, the construction of that recovery tool, okay, well, we can utilize our breath to then take advantage and stay longer in the ice bath. Okay, well, then learn more about breath to then bring breathing to our high school coaches that have no resources other than themselves. Okay.
Yeah.
Then can do that and connect it back to it. But I mean, the education is minimalist in every sense of the word. And that's what we aim to do, because we know the population that we're working with. It's parents and then strength coaches and sport coaches that then take on their responsibility of strength and conditioning for their team. More than 60% of our students within the methodology course, they have no other certification. So they're coming to us to learn how to practically apply strength and conditioning information and tools to give to their athletes immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole course was developed. I've taken every strength and conditioning certification out there. As hard as they were and challenging, invested the time to understand what they were trying to test for and why. And one of the biggest gaps was application. So awesome. You received this certification, even the SCCC from the CSCCA, very strenuous testing. And you stand there and you write a program, you defend it in front of three master coaches, and they give a grade sheet feedback, and then you pass or fail.
So it's like a master coach certification.
Yeah, for collegiate strength and conditioning coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they would argue the gold standard, but I mean, it's just a good test, but they don't give you feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no application. There's no tools to help you apply. They're leaning on your ability to connect with a coach in college and have that coach mentor you. But quoting John over here, quoting Greg Glassman, you fall to the level of your training. So my coach as a development, I fall to the limitations and the biases of the coach that trained me. So then I step up and get three coaches grading me, but giving me 0-3 feedback. Those three people have their own experiences that then could teach me.
Mm-hmm.
So our course focuses on application, applying right away, giving you the tools to grow and develop as a coach as you're coaching. It's written in a format where I'm going to apply this on day one. I'm going to look for it. I'm going to see it. And then the next day, the next section, I read this and I start to apply this. And my experience grows as I'm going through the course and applying it to athletes. I can see coordination unfold. I can see my hypertrophy and my athletes develop on a linear progression and then start to understand and make connections between the course material and then me coaching the athlete. And then our block one test, coaches come to us and then they stand and deliver the information. They sit down in a round table format. They have a very interactive social intelligence as a group. And then we give them feedback on their coaching, on their teaching, on their application and understanding of the material. And whether they pass or fail, they become a better person because of it. So we have a 70% pass rate, relatively high, but then there's still people that we send away and give them the feedback that they need to work on. And if they want to come back, hell yeah, we'll have them. If they don't, then apply the information and make your athletes better because of it. They are the man in the arena. They're taking the chance to come out here, put themselves through the ringer, like stand in front of John, myself, and our coaching staff here, and become better because of it. So we're going to do our damnedest to give them the feedback to help them empower themselves and their athletes. Again, I mean, roots all the way back to the coaching experiences that I had as an athlete and how unfulfilled, unfortunately, I was, but had success. I wasn't supposed to have success as a college athlete, but I did. So it's that aim, creating opportunities for kids out there that wouldn't have it otherwise through sets and reps and squats and coaching. It's fun.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
It's a much more, you know, the way you describe it, it's a much more comprehensive approach to coaching, right? It's not just, can you pass a test or a written test? Can you do, you know, demonstrate simple barbell movements? Can you, it's much more holistic sounding than just, and that's exactly, you know, you had coaches that exhibited pieces of that along the way, but nobody who really had that comprehensive whole package, which is what you're describing, and the, which is why, you know, the power athlete coaches are held to such a high standard, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. But what one of your favorite quotes of all time is, a coach needs a coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean, where do you fall into that process? Where do you seek? I mean, I know just based on some of our conversations, some of the ways that you seek coaching mentorship still, but maybe you can kind of describe those for listeners.
Very timely question. So I gotta thank the podcast for scratching that itch in the world of strength and conditioning performance. Mm-hmm. Extremely fortunate in the opportunity started by Ms. Hinsman over there, episodes ago. I mean, speak and sit down at a table with Louis Simmons, Jim Wendler, pulling Ruiz in. So I had the opportunity to work one-on-one with him, but still now sitting down with him as a peer and pulling more lessons out of him as he grows and develops as a coach and a father. Very fortunate with that and utilizing this platform in the world of strength and conditioning. On the note of Ruiz, in 2016, I was actually at the CSCCA conference in Orlando, and Raf's based in Tampa, and he drove up to hang out with me for the day, and we're sitting at the pool at one of the Disneyland resorts, just hanging out, and he dropped one of the most important pieces of advice, and I still hold on to this, is 2016, in that he obsessed with understanding the body, obsessed with understanding the nuances. He would travel to watch surgeries. So doctors perform surgeries on nerves, wrists, just everything, hands, to understand like the pitching mechanics. Dude went all out. And then he was reflecting on his investment in this time. And I had spent 4 months with him years before. And his guidance at this moment in time was that you need to explore outside of your obsession. So it can't just be about the body. It can't just be about communication. Identify the holes. And his reference was understanding now business, understanding marketing and branding, and how to stand yourself up as these things. So that was valuable at the time. And now, since our good friend Luke Summers had moved on, missing that business acumen mind, I had to seek mentorship elsewhere. So leaning on, again, connections within the fitness industry, speaking with Devin Mayer, he was out here in Austin last weekend, and his successful staying in the fitness business for decades. And then leaning on different, again, leaning on Power Athlete Radio alum, Mason Murphy, Camp Gladiator dude. I mean, he's seen that business grow from 1, 2, 3 people all the way into a national brand. So seeking people that have seen the fitness value in a brand, in a message, in a mission, and expand from small team that believe in something to now a national force. Whether you agree with their fitness practices or not, it's still, you know, lift weights, move, and you know, and be a good
culture. Yeah.
Culture. Absolutely. Culture. team buy-in and building something that people want to be a part of. So now seeking more of those people out that I admire and respect, that have, you know, built some camaraderie through experiences, you know, with them or, you know, otherwise. It's not just reading business books. I need to talk to people within the industry, because fitness is, it's the only industry I know. But if I talk to like a business straight up person and explain to them the nuances of fitness, they're like, no, that shouldn't work. Or that's weird. Because the most popular people in the industry are the ones that don't know shit. Like, but what are they doing properly that have projected them, like skyrocketed them to the top and have the top podcasts, even though you're shaking your head and would never apply said information that they're screaming from the mountaintop.
No, that's a good, I like that. That's a good, and that just goes to show you, you know, Raph is a perfect example. It's a good, it's very symbolic of how he himself has seen himself change as a coach, over time, and has been able to take a step back and get some perspective on his own limitations and, how that's impacting his ability to, you know, change lives or whatever. I think that's a good observation on his part. And I think we all have that, I think, to some degree as we evolve in our, either our coaching or our own training experiences, is just, I don't know what brings that time and experience and just conversations with other people. But, you know, if you're just, if Raph does nothing but try to specialize on, you know, how the body exactly how the body moves, forever and ever, and he goes to surgeries and he spends the rest of his life trying to, you know, learn every niche within the biomechanics, then he's going to be like, it's like, he's going to be some isolated dude in, I just think of like, you know, somebody who's like building a bomb in like a shelter in like the mountains somewhere. It's like, yeah, you have amassed all this knowledge, but how do you then, what do you do with it? Right. I mean, you have to have some outside influences, and some, you know, your Venn diagram, it has to touch other things in order to, you know, create a more like robust product, you know? So
yeah, if Raph does come up with a manifesto, however, I will read it.
Yeah, exactly.
And to quote Steve Jobs, creativity's in the connections. So like, you can find parallels with, and that was what I was referring to, if I'm going to go understand as much as I can about the sport of sprinting or triple jumping, and then bring it into how I can benefit my field athletes. Like, that's it. Creativity's in the connections. I don't have to do exactly what Coach Path does, but I can learn tools, coach's eye, perspective, and then aim to apply it one way or another if I find one piece that is applicable. Jeet Kune Do.
Discard what is not useful. Is that right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it sounds
something like that. Okay, last question, pulled from Fight Club. This one is inspired from Fight Club. If you could lift weights with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be?
Well, this is an easy one.
Don't Fred say Gandhi. Hatfield.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd fight Fred Hatfield. No, Dr. Squat, we had a cool opportunity to interview him in 2017. So fortunate, and I mean, the influence, the idea, the concepts that he practiced and wrote in his book, Power. And I mean, compensatory acceleration, train fast, be fast. And just the concept of this power position, which you can be explosive from, that just makes so much sense. But then if you walk into a weight room and just observe, in a performance-based weight room, just observe, you don't see this power and this pop when mechanical advantage increases. So just to understand, I'd ask the questions like the light bulb moments of when the connections were made. When did you figure it out? What snapped?
Mm-hmm.
How did you start to think this way? So then I can try to think like he thought to then have this concept and this idea change the trajectory of his entire, I mean, life, training, philosophy, writing. He was a doctor in philosophy, not, you know, the body. So that's Dr. Squat, Dr. Fred Hatfield in philosophy. But yeah, just figure out and find out why he thought what he did. That's the beauty of the podcast again.
Mm-hmm.
We have an author on, we get to read their book and then break, like rip apart and try to tear apart the ideas and the concepts to understand where they were coming from when they wrote that down. And going back to our test, like that's the block one test. You mm-hmm. literally sit at this table with me and then try to argue and have a social conversation with a group about the concepts of this stuff. Can you try to find fallacy? Can you try to fall or find where it breaks or where it doesn't apply?
Mm-hmm.
That's the challenge. Okay, well, let's pick it up. Let's break it apart and see what we can come up with. And then if there is any falter or fault or hole or a concept or angle that we haven't yet thought of, okay, well, this is a living, breathing approach, a methodology. We can work it into this concept, this idea that we call athleticism.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Well, that wraps up my line of questioning. Thanks for letting me pick your brain.
Yeah, putting the spotlight on top.
I thought you were going to say that you're the person you wanted to lift weights with was me in like 2 weeks.
Well, we will do that.
I know.
In the garage.
I'll take second place to Fred Hatfield, though. I only have one dumbbell at each weight, though, because I didn't realize that when I ordered them, they come as singles, not as pairs. So there's going to be a lot of praxis involved.
Unilateral training.
Yeah, unilateral or just slightly uneven. Imbalanced. Yeah. It's fine. Everything's fine. It'll be good. Well, this is a good chat. Hopefully people will get to know you a little bit better and how you have breathed life, in your words, into the Power Athlete methodology and where all that stems from, because I learned a little something here today myself.
And if people want to learn more about you and follow you, Callie, where do they go?
Me? Why would you want to? Not that anyone would want to. I'm basically, I'm a police broad with a couple of kids and a cat. But I'm at Callie Hinsman. And I don't know why anyone would want to follow me, but if you do, all right.
Puns, lots of puns.
Puns, there's a few puns. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. And then at powerathletehq.com, learn more about the education we spoke of. There's a free trial course at academy.powerathletehq.com. You get to see some updated lecture videos in there, even if you have taken the course. As edits occur, we update them live on the site. So if you've been through it, you get it, air quotes, there's still something to learn as we've continued to learn through the podcast and application of training, Power Athlete Training. So there you have it. Follow me, McQuilkin, at McQuilkin. But most of the good stuff is all on powerathletehq.com.
I thought you were going to forget how to spell your own last name. Like you were hesitating through the letters.
No, taking my sweet time, because the amount of times that now I'm taking this personally, my name has been misspelled in different presentations. I'll call out Nate Palin and the NSCA a couple years ago. And then just throughout just my career.
Do they spell it K-E-N?
E. Yeah.
Brutal.
Fuck out of here.
Brutal. Oh my God. I can hear my kid yelling. well, now it's time for you to empower your performance. Bye. Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.